So, hello, welcome to another Pharmacy in Practice podcast. So, a little change in direction today. I'm quite interested in trying something a little different. So, I did wonder if the podcast format would be quite a nice way to spread the word about research as it gets published. You know, the name Pharmacy in Practice suggests that there is a practice element, and I've always been very interested in making sure things are relevant to practice and not least research in this case. So without further ado, it's with great pleasure we're joined by a researcher, Cathy Geeson. Would you like to introduce yourself, Cathy?
Yes, thank you, Jonathan. So I'm a hospital pharmacist by background, and around 4 years ago, I became interested in research. So I'm not a researcher through and through. It's a relatively recent move for me. And I became in research because I had a project that I was really passionate about delivering. And I was fortunate in getting funding to undertake that as a full-time three-year fellowship with the NIHR. So back in practice now, but that was sort of a three-year space in my life where I just dedicated myself to doing this particular research project.
Excellent. And how, first and foremost, how did it feel going out of practice into research? Must be totally different.
I have to say it was potentially quite scary because it was something that I dabbled in, but I hadn't really had a huge amount of exposure to. But I was fortunate to undertake an MSc with University College London. And as part of that, we looked at research as a competency that advanced practitioners require. And as such, I felt a little bit more confident. And one of the things I think was really important to me was networking. So I, at the point of having the idea for the project, I looked to see who might be able to support me academically, and was very fortunate that Brian Adeem Franklin from UCL was willing to take on the project and supervise me in it. So that was really sort of how my research journey started. It was having an idea, finding some funding, and finding people that could support me, given that I was a fairly novice research practitioner.
I think it's great. I think anybody who sort of steps out of their day job is very brave, straight off the bat. So you're winning already, I would say.
I would say it's been a more difficult journey than I thought. It has been a very steep learning curve, but it has been incredibly rewarding. So I would recommend it to anybody who has the passion to really do something that's outside of their comfort zone.
From a personal point of view, Cathy, it's absolutely something I'd love to do. But you've got to make a conscious decision to invest that time properly and, you know, really go for it, I guess. You're not going to do this overnight. I mean, you mentioned you've been working 3 years at it. So, that's brilliant. So the reason I got you on or invited you on was to just do what I said at the start of the podcast. So you've done a bit of research around this newly developed medicines optimization assessment tool. So what is that, straight off the bat? What is the tool?
Okay, well, the original idea was to identify a way for practicing hospital pharmacists to prioritize their workload so that they could identify patients most in need of medicines optimization. So it was really looking at what methods there may be for pharmacists to effectively target patients whilst maintaining patient safety. So it was all about thinking about using prediction research within healthcare, which we do all the time with cardiac risk calculators and Waterlow scores for pressure ulcers. And I was quite interested to know whether we could use that research methodology within a pharmacy practice setting, specifically around clinical prioritisation of patients within general medicine.
Very good. I mean, it's already sounds quite innovative. So you're trying to, it's like a targeted missile, really. Rather than a broad brush approach, you're trying to risk assess patients and target the interventions where they're necessary, rather than perhaps focusing on the simple patients where there isn't much of a clinical return. Would that be fair to say?
It would. And I think one of the main drivers was I recognised I was managing the clinical pharmacy service at the time at the hospital I was working in. And I recognised that the pharmacists were returning from the wards on a regular basis, saying that they couldn't see every patient every day. And certainly some of the younger pharmacists were finding that that was really quite stressful. And so they were saying things like, oh, you know, I'm losing sleep because what happened to the ones that I didn't see yesterday? And I was aware that the pressures on pharmacy services in hospitals, as in community and all sectors, it's increasing. And within hospital practice, there's a push, obviously, to extend services to 7 days, which is diluting the service potentially across the weekday working. And so pharmacy clinical prioritisation, to me, was just a must do. It was something that I needed to support the staff that were working with me. But also, as I said, it was all around patient safety. What about the ones that we're missing? If you have a day where you have 30 new patients and time to see 15, which 15 do you put as your first priority and which 15 have to wait till tomorrow? And it was all around really giving confidence to pharmacy staff whilst maintaining a level of patient safety that was justifiable.
Excellent. So not benefits potentially beyond the patient actually as well?
Yeah, so potentially it was around about supporting pharmacy staff as well as supporting the pharmacy service and the patients.
Excellent. And I mean, my interest is well documented. I never stop writing about it, to be honest, is asthma, particularly in community pharmacy. I'm really interested in that area. And I do a post-exacerbation respiratory clinic. So you're always risk assessing folk, aren't you? And in my world, I'm looking at, you know, number of hospital admissions. I'm looking at oral steroid use. I'm looking at how many salbutamols the patient's using and so on and so forth. What is the equivalent in this tool?
I guess what you're describing is where I started from, because I've been in practice a number of years and I was aware that pharmacists have their own methods of prioritising. So some of us may prioritise based on the diagnosis. So we may prioritise all patients with a particular diagnosis over another, or it may be age, or it may be the use of high-risk medicines, maybe patients on intravenous medication, or those with organ dysfunction, like renal dysfunction or liver disease. And so there's a variety of elements which potentially could cause risk. And what I wanted to know was which of those had the highest impact in terms of the risk of having medication-related problems whilst in hospital, and which ones were incidental, because in some ways, some risks become correlated with others. So for example, age of the patient, I found, was actually non-significant, although you might imagine it would be, but it's non-significant because the number of comorbidities actually incorporates age, because the two are very similar. If you think as you get older, you mm-hmm. potentially have more comorbidities. So it was trying to identify which ones really are important, because you may have a young patient with a high number of comorbidities, and it's the comorbidities that potentially are the risk, not the age of the patient.
Got you. Excellent. And what, so the tool must have an output. Is that a, you know, is it a percentage? Is it a number? I assume the higher the number, the more need there is for a polypharmacy review or something like that, or a medicines optimization intervention.
Yeah, that's absolutely spot on, Jonathan. That's how it's been designed. So basically, you look at all the risk factors, you identify the ones that convey the greatest risk to patients, and each of those has a numerical score. And so you enter in patient details, so for example, how many comorbidities they have, how many medicines they take, what their primary diagnosis is, what high-risk medicines they take. And each of those is given a score, and you get a composite score from that, which gives a predicted probability of them having a medication-related problem that's moderate or severe during the admission. And because if I told you your risk was 32%, you may wonder what that means in practice. So what we've also done is that we've risk categorized. So we have a medium, a high, and a low, so low, medium, and high risk categories, so that that actually directs pharmacists to know what action they need to take. So the result that you get when you use the risk score is that you get a predicted probability, which can range from pretty much 0 to 100, but you also get a risk category. So you're told whether that patient is low risk, medium risk, or high risk. And then you can maybe, if you've got 10 patients that are high risk, you start with the one with the highest risk score and then potentially work your way down.
And is there, I guess the context of the next question, this is where we're, apologies, we're scientists, I'm gonna we're gonna tear your study apart, sorry. I guess my concern with and I'm completely not very competent in this area, obviously, so take my questions with a pinch of salt, please, but I guess I'm a wee bit maybe concerned about putting a number on things. So why would I say that? Well, very simple example. I don't know, last year in the autumn, I had a patient come into my on-the-day clinic, absolutely fine, but they were a little bit short of breath, mm-hmm. and pregnant, and there wasn't enough to refer them, and I just thought, my spidey sense was kicking in, and I thought, so ordered a D-dimer. Anyway, it was through the roof. Turned out she had a pulmonary embolism.
Wow.
But in risk terms, she was on the face of it, okay, and probably if I'd sent her away, it would have been maybe okay, I'm not sure, but I didn't, thank goodness. So the question around that, is there a risk of, in terms of putting a number on this need for medicines optimization?
I think that's a really good point and very well made with the example that you gave. And yes, there is a risk. The risk is that obviously you will have some false negatives in this. And the way the prediction tool is set up is that it's set up to identify 90% of patients who are at risk of moderate or severe medication related problems. Now, inherently, that means you're going to miss 10% of those patients. So what we did do is we looked at the problems that were experienced by that 10% that the tool potentially misses, to look at the number and the severity. And what we were able to establish was that patients in that group, so the false negatives, experienced fewer medication-related problems, and those problems were of lower severity. That said, there is still a risk if you're using any prioritization tool that the prioritization tool will not be 100% perfect. So we would always say, speaking on behalf of my co-authors, Brian Dean Franklin and Lee Wei, that when you are using a tool like this, you can't lose sight of your professional judgment. And those spidey senses that as pharmacists and pharmacy technicians that we have, they also have to be borne in mind. And I guess this tool was very much around giving some continuity to care and giving some focus, particularly for more junior pharmacists, so that they felt confident in making decisions. And at that stage, they may not have developed the spidey senses that you and I might feel we have over a few years of practice. So it was really to try and give some consistency, some degree of safety, but also recognizing that, as with all things, no test is going to be 100% accurate all of the time. But we did try and set the bar quite high at aiming for 90% sensitivity, so that we could pick 9 out of 10 patients who are likely to experience a problem that potentially was significant in terms of its clinical impact.
Brilliant. Please don't take my question as a criticism. I'm sitting here, you know, in my office thinking, gosh, Kathy's been doing this for 3 years and we're asking difficult questions, you know.
I welcome the difficult questions because it helps to make you think about where some of the potential limitations might be within research, and it's always good to be cognizant of that. So thank you for it. I really appreciate it.
Perfect. And I think your answer was really interesting. I have sort of reticence with with the level of technology that we bring into the process, or the level of kind of you basically you always need a pharmacist or a pharmacy technician to cast their eye over things. I don't think we're anywhere near not doing that. And also eyeballing a patient, you know, looking at the patient is very important regardless of what you're doing. So, but that said, and there's loads of precedent, as you've rightly pointed out, in other areas, adding an element of consistency, particularly for junior colleagues, is so useful. I mean, you just in my area, you look at the asthma control test, for example. It's such a simple 5-question validated questionnaire, but it's not the be all and end all, but it really does help to give you an idea of where you should start with a patient, actually. So no, that's really interesting. Overall, what were the limitations of the study, and if you were doing it again, what would you do differently, perhaps?
I think I'll turn that around and start with the strengths of the study, because
Good.
one thing I would say about the work that we did was that we worked from the start to really ensure that it was methodologically sound, because prediction modelling is fraught with problems. If you do it in a way that's not statistically secure, then you can end up with the wrong answer. So we set out from the start to make sure it was as sound as we could make it. And we also tried to make it generalizable in that we used two study sites with very diverse populations, both in terms of socioeconomic status and ethnicity. So we tried to make it as generalizable and reproducible as we could. And we also chose risk factors that were available in practice and easy to use. So we tried to make it as straightforward to use as possible. Now, in terms of limitations, and all research has limitations, it's potentially possible that we underestimated the number of patients who experienced medication-related problems. And that's because we used an observational study method and we used the pharmacists working with the patients day-to-day in practice to identify and record the medication-related problems that they came across. Now, it's possible that they didn't see all of them because we don't all see everything. And it's possible that they didn't record all of them. That said, the amount of problems that we identified was consistent with previous research using alternative methods. So we found that around 60% of patients experienced a medication-related problem, and around 41% of those had a problem that was moderate or severe. So I'm relatively confident that we had a strong method, although potentially had we used a more objective method of identification, that might have been different. Another problem is you can't include all predictors. So we did do a survey of healthcare professionals, patients, and the public, and we asked them what they would like to see included in a model like this, in a predictive tool like this. And we found things suggested to us, like disability and non-adherence, which potentially are very important, but unless you can measure them reliably and that they occur frequently enough in the population, and that's 5% of the population, you can't reliably use them as risk factors in the prediction tool. So I would say those are the sort of the two main limitations of the study, and people would need to bear in mind when using it that they may need to include, and this comes back to your other comment about eyeballing patients and having that contact. It could be that the patient's having problems with being able to remember to take their medicines, and that's a really important role for pharmacists. But this tool will not pick those patients out for you because non-adherence isn't included as a risk factor. So my suggestion would be, this is around medication safety risk, and to look at a patient more holistically, we might suggest that this tool would be effective in identifying those patients you should potentially focus on in terms of medicine reconciliation or medication review, but we would not want to say that the patient should not receive any intervention. And our suggestion, we had a consensus group of pharmacy staff to work with us on this, and what came out of it was a suggestion that potentially we could triage patients and send the most appropriate member of the team, depending on the patient's risk factor. So a more senior pharmacist may focus on the high-risk patients, and you could work your way down to maybe having an experienced pharmacy technician being involved in certain stages, and then potentially less experienced members of the team seeing the very low risk patients just to check they're okay, to eyeball them, to just ask them about whether they believe they've got any problems with their medicines. And that was to try and encompass this holistic view of what pharmacists do in practice. It's not all about medication safety. We look at other aspects of their care as well.
See, that's a really interesting aspect for me. So you're using the tool to prioritise, obviously, and risk assess the patients. But you're also, what you said there was really cool, because you're actually prioritising which patients you would give to which staff members. So obviously more complex to more experienced, and then perhaps the easier ones, in inverted commas. No one's easy, no patient's easy or straightforward. They've always got surprises, but you know what I mean, to the junior colleagues. So no, that's absolutely really interesting.
And that was, I think that came out, that's come out towards the latter stages of doing this work. It's a recognition that everybody needs something from pharmacy potentially, even if it's just, and with you working in asthma, I'm sure you must come across a lot of patients who actually don't understand enough about how to use their inhaler devices or understand the difference between a reliever and a preventer. So the education that we provide as pharmacists and pharmacy technicians is a really important part of what we do in hospitals and in community. So it was trying to look at it potentially as a way of structuring the workforce capacity that we have, as you say, and making sure the patients are seen by the right person within the pharmacy team. But this is really part of what the next stages of the research would be, doing some validation of the tool itself, but then also looking at what the impact and implementation strategies might be about the use of it. So the bits we're now looking at are things that we've started to consider, but it still needs some research doing to find the best way to actually implement it in practice.
Got you. You've pinched my next question, but that's absolutely perfect. One final question. Would this tool be useful in other settings? For example, I'm thinking community pharmacy is the obvious one. We're the most accessed health profession. You know, wouldn't it be great if we could deploy a sort of assisted decision-making tool like this to prioritise people that need a wee bit more support with their medicines?
And that's absolutely true. And I had a comment last week. I was at a meeting, and another area that was raised was care homes. So again, it's a sort of a similar setting in terms of pharmaceutical care needs of the patients. The only problem would be is this tool has been developed in a very specific population, which is general medical patients within a hospital setting. Now, one potential next step may be to look at whether this could be transposed into other care settings. It could be that it may work. It could be that it won't, because it's not the same population that we're looking at. So it may require some work to adjust the model in different settings. But the methodology behind prediction research certainly could be applied to any different pharmacy care practice setting. It's potentially within hospitals, in paediatrics, or within surgery, within the community, as you say, either within community pharmacy or care home settings or in a GP practice setting. But the moat may need to be adjusted. The moat wouldn't necessarily be able to be lifted and put into a different setting and used without it being reassessed to see whether it works in that patient population.
Sure. Well, I think it just leaves me to congratulate you on your achievements so far. I think the thing that drew me to this tool was the assisted decision making and all the added benefits to that. I know we've discussed about helping prioritize patients to in terms of their complexity, and also allowing you to target those more difficult or more risky patients, as it were. So I think that general concept is fab. And I hope someone takes on the battle and takes it to the next stage, either by developing the tool further in the current setting, or perhaps trying to well, probably initially deploying it as it is in another setting and see if it works, and then go from there. Is that fair to say?
Well, I suppose one thing that's really important to say is that the tool has been developed, but it does require external validation, be that in the population that it was developed for or in different populations. So if anybody is interested in working on it, I'd be very keen to hear from them and potentially see how we might be able to collaborate on something. So yes, external validation, impact and implementation studies are the next steps for the moat. So I guess it's just a matter of seeing where we go from there. At the moment, we're looking at how that might work in practice, but I have no firm plans yet to see how that will work. So it's a work in progress at the moment. So I would be very keen to hear from anybody who may be interested in working with me on that.
Fantastic. And wouldn't it be wonderful if one of the listeners got in touch? Fingers crossed.
Yeah, that would be perfect. That would be exactly the outcome that I'd be hoping for. So thank you, John. That would be great.
Pleasure. No pressure, listeners. Get in touch. All right. Thank you very much for joining us, Cathy.
No
And
problem at all.
I found it really interesting. And as I said previously, huge respect for anyone that steps outside their day job and does something different. I mean, you've been working on this for 3 years, so it's obviously the makings of a fantastic asset in the armory of pharmacists. So well done, and see you soon, hopefully.
Thank you very much, Jonathan, and I hope to see you soon.
Pleasure. Take care.
Okay, take care. Bye.